Good morning. This is Doug Fain, and this is All Things Jessamine. Glad you could join us here on this Saturday morning. We're going to be talking to Nicholasville Police Chief Barry Waldrop. Barry's father, Kyle, was killed in the military when he was serving in Vietnam, one of 58,000 Americans who never came home. We'll talk to Barry about that experience and about his dad's life, and we'll do it right after this word from our sponsor, the Farmers Bank of Jessamine County.
Beginnings are important, especially when it comes to building a future. From start to finish, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County will be with you every step of the way. Whether it's a house, a car, a college fund, or saving for retirement, it all starts here. Stop by any of our four convenient Jessamine County locations today or visit us on the web at myfarmersbank.net. Banking with friends and neighbors, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County, equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. This is Doug Fain. Glad to have you here on this Saturday morning as we do some more remembering and learning about people, places, and things in Jessamine County. Today's program, we're going to talk about a fella who has not been with us for quite some time, but his son has. And the reason he has not was because he was one of 58,000 people who gave their lives during the Vietnam conflict. During that war, over 3 million men and women served our nation, and 58,000 gave their lives. And during the conflict, it was Kentucky. There was about 125,000 Kentuckians who served, and 1,103 paid the ultimate price. Well, one of them was from right here in our county. On March 29th of 73, the last U.S. troops left Nam, and in 2012, President Obama declared March 29th as Vietnam Veterans Day. And back on the 29th of March, about a week and a half ago, they had a special ceremony down at Camp Nelson to commemorate the 50th anniversary of that day, and they had a ceremony to recognize those veterans. With me today is the Nicholasville Police Chief Barry Waldrop, because his dad, Kyle, was one of the Jessamine Countyans who lost his life serving the military in the Vietnam War. Good morning, Barry. Glad to have you this morning.
Good morning, Doug.
We appreciate you coming in and talking about this, because I know that it's not an easy subject. Anytime you lose a parent for any reason, it's not easy. But when you lose a parent in this situation, one that you haven't seen for quite some time, it's got to be even harder. And you've got a great story to tell about your dad, Kyle. Let's start by telling how Kyle got started. Was he born here in our county? And who was his? Where was he born? How was his parents? And that kind of information.
His parents were Albert and Nell Waldrop from High Bridge, Kentucky.
Okay.
And he was born in High Bridge.
High Bridge boy. And High Bridge boy. About, let's see, if he was in Nam.
He was 37 years old when he was killed.
So he was probably born mid-30s?
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound right? Maybe it's late 30s, right. Somewhere in there. Kyle Waldrop was born in High Bridge. And how did he and your mother meet up?
Far as I know, was that she was from High Bridge. She lived there, and they kind of met there in High Bridge, mm-hmm. became friends, mm-hmm. and then I guess boyfriend and girl, you know, girlfriend started dating till the point they finally got married.
Yeah, and along came Barry.
And along came me. When I was born, he was in Korea fighting the Korean War.
Now, how did your dad, was he drafted? Did he just sign up? How did he get in the military to start with?
The story starts this, and his mother had told me before she passed away, he actually went into the Marine Corps when he was 15 years old. He actually was able to lie about his age.
Really?
And then they found out when he was about 17 and a half, and they kicked him out. And when he turned 18, he joined the Army and went back in for the rest of his life.
So he served 2.5 years, and they didn't know.
They didn't know.
And liked it so much that he said, this is a life for me. So at 18, did you graduate high school?
Yes.
And went back into the Army.
Right back into the Army.
But he was at a time where Korea was going on. Was that his first tour of duty, was Korea?
Right. Korea was his first tour of duty.
Survived that, but during that time, you were born.
I was born.
Now, before we get too far down the pike, let's talk a little bit about you, because we have people on this station that listen that are from here or been here, and they know who people are, but we have a lot of people listening in other places that don't know Barry Waldrop. You've been our police chief for a long time.
Going on 20 years.
Gosh, it's been quick, 20 years.
It has been quick.
How did you get interested in the police business?
Well, it all started when I was a kid. Matter of fact, when we were stationed at Fort Bragg, and North Carolina, mm-hmm. And when I was trying to learn how to ride a bicycle, there was two state troopers, North Carolina state troopers, that lived on the street.
Yeah.
And they were the ones that more or less took hold of me and taught me how to ride a bicycle.
Yeah.
And I became, they would let me sit in their car and see the police stuff. And I started really getting enthused then. And then as time went on, I just became so interested. And I come here. When we moved back here, I made friends with people like Jerry Lovett, Roger Isaacs, when I was a kid, who kind of took you under their wing. And they knew you was a pretty good kid, so they kind of look after you out there when we was out running around and so forth.
So did you become a policeman pretty much out of high school?
Right. Well, I went to college when I got out of high school. I went to Eastern and majored in police administration until I was able to get 21 years old to get into law enforcement. And when I did, I started on the Jessamine County Sheriff's Department.
Okay. Who was sheriff then?
I started under Gene Goley.
Okay.
And then I worked under Benny Peel.
Yeah. Now, did you go on to be a policeman in Nicholasville after that?
No. I went to Richmond and worked at a factory called Exide, and I was there 23 years and applied back here for this chief's position, and I landed it and been here ever since.
I remember that very well, as I was one of the commissioners that, that voted to hire you, I'm honored to say. 20 years in the business. Now, tell us about your wife.
She's Brenda Burr. She's from Wilmore, Arzy and Maxine. Maxine just recently passed away.
And I know you were telling me before the show of how much you appreciated Brenda and her support through all of this that went on you through your dating years and even your marriage, helping you to cope with what had happened to your dad. You have kids?
We have two daughters. We have two grandchildren, one 5 and one 7. And I live every day just to see those two grandchildren.
It's amazing how your priorities change, isn't it?
I didn't know I had a life until they come along.
Well, now that we know all about you and your family, let's go back to your dad and his service. He got through Korea without any problems. What tour of duties did he have between there and Nam? Did he have any?
Yes, he served. I think there was two situations where he served in different countries. I think one of them was Korea. Mm-hmm. He had went back and served, and I think he was there 12 months. And then I think it was two tours he went to Korea, and then the rest of the time was Vietnam.
So because of that, Barry, you were used to him leaving.
Yes, that was...
I mean, that was part of your life.
That was our life.
You know, Dad, at some point in time, is going to be gone. He's going to be gone for a while, and he's going to be back.
Right.
He's over in this other country doing something military. So you were used to that.
Right.
That was not anything new when this first, this tour of Nam came up. Now, how many tours did he have in Nam before the last one?
Two.
He had two prior to that.
Right.
And do you remember how long those were for?
Each one was for 1 year, 12 months.
So he went over in a year's time. Now, was he ground forces? What did he tell you what he did?
His MO was a combat medic, okay?
Okay.
Now, this last time when he went back, he was assigned to the 85th, they call him the 85th something, I can't remember. But he was assigned, it was in the Kaen Tong province, South Vietnam, and he was with the special forces. And they were training the South Vietnamese on how to fight and do guerrilla warfare and so forth so they could pull American troops out and end the war. That became the president's strategy because it was election time.
Now, this would have been President Johnson.
Johnson.
Okay. Exactly. Kennedy was already dead at this time. Dead. Johnson was president. What year would that have been? This was his third tour, right?
March the 12th, 1969 is when he was killed.
We have talked prior to the program. We was kind of talking a little bit about this. We figured out you were about in the, what, eighth grade, somewhere in there. Now, you had an interesting story about your dad, and whenever he would leave on these tours, what he would say to you and what he wouldn't say to you and things like that. And I can really relate to this as we were talking, because I remember the night before my brother died. You know, usually when we left each other, it would be, well, see you later, talk to you later. But that night, I never will forget, his last words to me as he looked me in the eye was, "Doug, please be careful." That was the last thing I ever heard him say. So as you're going to tell us now, there were certain ways he would say goodbye, but on this day it was different. Tell us about that story.
It was different that usually every time he left for a tour of duty, me and my mother would get together with him and take him to the airport with all his stuff. He'd have uniforms and stuff and duffel bags. and we would see him off. We would spend some time with him at the airport and talk to him and stuff, and he would talk to me and, you know, like most dads do to a son about behaving and not getting in any trouble and stuff like that, make sure I wrote him. He wanted to hear from me at least once a week, write him a letter. Yeah. And I told him I wanted him to write me, and that's the kind of thing. And we would hug him and stuff, and halftime we'd all stand there and cry and carrying on, then off he would go. But this time, it was really, really different because he came to me and I was playing football at the high school. And he said, I want to take you to practice. You got practice day. And I said, yes, I do. And he said, well, I'm going to take you to practice. And I even told him, I said, well, no, I want to go with you to the airport. I'll skip practice day. And he said, no, you're going to practice. I want to take you. And I said, well, okay. So we got in the car and we was actually 2 hours early for practice behind the high school where we usually go. And he pulled me back there and he pulled over in the grass and he parked. And he started talking to me again, and he was telling me, you know, same thing that he usually does, how much he loved me, how much he was proud of me, that he wanted me to behave and do good in school, keep my grades up, and write him letters. And then when he got done, he said, I got one more thing that I need to ask you. And I said, sure, Dad, what is it? And he said, I need you to promise me something. And I said, okay, what is it? And he said, if I don't make it back, I want you to promise me that you'll take care of your mother.
Wow. This man had a gut feeling, didn't he?
I don't know what it was. And I told him, I said, nothing's going to happen. You're going to be all right. You'll be back. He said, well, we don't know that.
Yeah.
But I need to hear you promise me that if something happens to me, you're going to take care of your mother. She's going to need you, and you'll have to step up. I expect you to do this.
15 years old, you said you were?
I was 15 years old.
Wow.
And I said, well, Dad, nothing's going to happen to you. And I got to crying. And I said, you're going to be okay. And he said, well, I hope so, but I just need you to promise me that. Yeah. And he said, I know I'm putting a big burden on you, but before I leave here, I just need to hear you promise me if something happens to me, you'll take care of your mother. And I hugged him, and I said, Dad, I promise you, if something does happen, I will take care of her.
Yeah.
And he said, okay.
And the thing is, Barry, looking back on it now, you know that on that day that he died, one of his last thoughts was probably, I can die in peace because I know everything's going to be all right, back home.
I hope so, because I really worked hard and went through a whole lot trying to make sure she was taken care of.
Well, March the 12th, you said it was?
March the 12th, 1969.
You're sitting at school. Your mother is an employee of the school and works in the cafeteria.
Yes.
And this has been about, what you said, 6 months?
Yeah, it had been 6 months.
And I'm sure you'd been in contact by letters and things were okay. Again, he was teaching South Vietnam how to fight.
Right.
That was his job.
That was his job.
All right. What happened on that day?
The story, when I went to school that day. The night before, it got to the point that when we watched television and stuff, you'd always see on television they were showing so many American soldiers killed, so many wounded, so many Viet Cong, so forth. And a lot of times I got to watching that movie to see if I could see my dad on that television. I think, well, he may be among them soldiers they're showing.
And they, Barry, interrupt you. This was the first war that television really televised what was going on and showed you actual footage of what was happening every day.
Every day you got to watch that stuff. And when I was sitting there, I come to realize, well, maybe he's one of them that could be hurt. And then I can remember sitting there that night, the night before I come to school that morning, and I was actually praying and saying, surely to goodness my father won't get hurt or get killed. Surely to goodness that won't happen to me. I actually turned the TV off. It got to the point that I don't want to watch this no more. I don't want to see this stuff. I can't deal with that anymore. I'm not going to watch that. So the next morning I got up and I go to school just like a routine day. I go to school and I'm sitting in the classroom that particular morning, and students started coming in, friends of mine. And they started to tell me, Barry, your dad's down the hall.
And dad's down the hall?
Yeah, your dad is down the hall. He's looking for you. And I said, it can't be my dad because he's got 6 more months in Vietnam. It can't be him.
Now let me. This is not a dream you had. This actually happened.
Yes, sir.
Students were saying to you, "Your dad is waiting for you."
Right.
Wow.
And then another kid come in. There was two or three of them come in. They said the same thing. Man, there's a soldier down there, and it's your dad, man. He's looking for you. And I was standing there, and I thought maybe he's made it back early.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got to come home.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, it was first. Then when I got up, I thought, I better go check. So I get up, and I go out the door, and as I'm starting down the hall, all of a sudden it dawned on me, because I remember him talking, that if you're wounded, they send a telegram.
Mm-hmm.
If you're killed, they come and tell you.
Mm.
Well, then I got so weak, my legs were just barely starting to move, and I got to shaking in my legs because I thought, oh, God, surely the goodness, this is not what they're here for, to tell me that he's dead.
Yeah.
So I made it down the hall, and as I turned right at the end there, right by the principal's office where you go out the front doors, there stood two soldiers. And I walked up to them, and I said, are you looking for me? And one of the soldiers turned and said, are you Barry? And I said, yeah. He reached his arms out, put them around me, pulled me into him, and got down close to my ear, and he said, son, I got the worst news in the world. Your father's been killed. Well, I just buckled.
Of course.
It was over with. I mean, I just fell to the ground, and that soldier worked with me for about an hour, and then I made it from there to the lunchroom where my mother was, and those two soldiers went right with me to the lunchroom.
So your mom, who worked in the same school, had already been told. She is in the lunchroom or somewhere, I'm sure, with some people she worked with trying to comfort her as they come and tell you.
Exactly. And
so the reunion with you and your mother was probably one of the most emotional things you've ever been through in your life.
Oh, yeah. That was a horrible day.
Yeah.
It really was.
What happened to your dad? What was the cause of death?
The telegrams that they finally emailed us and sent to us and so forth said that they were out in the bush, uh-huh, and they had the South Vietnamese with them. Mm-hmm. And they had been out there for quite a while and doing training and so forth. And they made it back to what they call should have been a safe zone.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
When they got back to this location from being out in the bush fighting and so forth, the North Vietnamese had really set up an ambush, and they estimated 2,000 to 3,000 started coming to the camp, and they started throwing mortars in and mm-hmm. and rockets and stuff like that into the camp, and there weren't but about 30 some odd of them. And so the first thing they did was call for air support, and the air support told them that you'll have to hold because we're tied up, we cannot get to you right now, you got to hold. And then they called for artillery. They said, we need artillery in on this location now, we're being overrun and they're coming in hard at us and so forth. And the artillery said that basically same thing, y'all will have to hold, we can't get to you right now, we're on another target.
Mm.
But by the time the air support and everything was able to fly in and get to them and stuff, almost all of them were killed.
Yeah.
And my father was one of them.
It was a tough time after that, Barry. I mean, you and your mom, here tough. You are, because you're an only child.
Exactly.
And you and your mom had to somehow get through this. But it had to be, it couldn't have been easy, but I would imagine it had to be just maybe 1% easier, because your dad had had that talk with you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now that you look back on it, and I'm sure over these past years that has gone by, your dad kind of had a feeling something was going on, and you'd had that last great visit, and that he was assured that his boy was going to be a man. And that has to bring some kind of comfort, knowing that at least Daddy knew I promised him and I would do what I'd do.
Well, that was always on my mind.
Yeah.
And I was always pushing and struggling to accomplish that,
because
mm-hmm. I was always looking after her mm-hmm. and trying to take care of her, because I promised him I would.
Yeah.
And I wanted to live mm-hmm. to that promise, because, you know, things really got really tough after that, because my mother actually had a nervous breakdown, and she went into the psychiatric ward of St. Joseph Hospital when they had one at that time,
mm-hmm.
and she was in there for one solid year before she got to start coming back home.
Wow.
And she basically was traumatized and just lost her mind due to the nervous breakdown.
Now, you would have only been 15 or 16 years old.
I was 15 years
Who
old.
Who took care of Barry at that time?
Barry took care of Barry. I had an uncle Wilmore, Jimmy Anderson, and I had an aunt lived next door, Eleanor Gullett.
Yeah.
And Eleanor helped me a lot. And yeah. Jimmy was always looking after me, asked me if I needed anything, what I needed.
You grew up quick.
I had to become a man overnight.
You know, my son is 16, and I can't imagine him having to grow up that quick. Although you did an honorable thing in helping your mom, you kind of, your childhood was short.
It was short. It was very short.
And I know you would do the same thing over.
Yes.
I understand that, but you know, that's the thing that a lot of people, I don't think, realize. When you have someone like your dad who was serving our country and doing what he was called to do and loses his life, the effect it has, not only that day when you found out or even that month, but for years. You know, not only did Kyle Waldrop lose his life, that day Barry Waldrop lost his childhood.
And basically, my mother was killed that day.
And, yes, she was never the same.
Never the same.
So it was a far-reaching. And it wasn't just your family.
No.
It was 58,000 other families who gave their lives during that period.
They suffered just like I did, went through the same pain. I mean, you know, after it was over with, I still lived. When people would ask me about my dad, friends or something, I would just tell them that he was dead. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was because I was still waiting on him to come home.
Yeah. Thinking maybe. Maybe they're wrong.
There's that hope.
Yeah.
They made a mistake.
Yeah.
He's still out there. He's going to make it home. And I used to pray, please let him come home because that would help my mother.
How long after he died did she live?
She lived quite a few years. I mean, it's just back in 2003 when she passed away.
But was never the same.
Never the same. She never was the same person. She stayed in and out of hospitals. She stayed in and out of psychiatric care. And that was the way she spent the rest of her life.
But don't you know the first thing she said to him when she joined him was, boy, your boy did all right. He did what he promised. You know, Barry, a couple, 3 years ago, and you've heard this story, my family went to Washington. My son decided he didn't want to go on the eighth grade trip. He'd rather us go as a family. So we planned our trip for fall break. And as luck would have it, it was the week of the government shutdown. So we get in Washington and we can't go anywhere. The Smithsonian's closed, the Capitol's closed, all these places are closed, and the monuments have gates around them. Well, I told my children, my wife, my mother was with me. We went over toward the World War II Veterans Monument. And there was one little gate with a sign, no one allowed or whatever. Well, I'm going to tell you, there was a lot of people there that day that did not pay attention to that sign, me included. I was not going to let a government shutdown keep me from my kids from seeing that. And just beyond that is the Vietnam Wall. People, if you ever get to go to Washington and you see nothing else, make sure you see those two things, the World War II veteran and the Vietnam Wall. Now, when you see the wall, though, you see all those names up there, some 58,000 engraved into this wall that goes on forever, it seems. And you think, oh, that's bad. But when you find somebody's name that you knew, now, I didn't know your dad, but I know you. And when I was able to look in a catalog that they had right there at the wall and was able to look at his name and what section he was at and actually walk over and look up and see etched in that stone Kyle Waldrop, it took on a whole different meaning because I knew you. And it's a feeling that you can't describe. Now, I'm not even related. I can't imagine. Have you been to the wall?
No.
I can't imagine the feelings you would have if you were to see it.
I'm going in May.
And I wish you luck, and it'll be hard. Yeah. But if you go knowing that those people on that wall, they weren't the ones that ran this war. Whether you agree with it or not, the politics, forget that. The fact is that all these people did their job. Maybe they didn't want to do it, but they did it for the good of us. And it has to make you proud. Even though it's sad to look up and see Kyle Waldrop, it has to make you proud to know that his name is there with those other 57,999.
It does, Doug. It really does, but it took so long because I went from just saying my father's dead to my father was killed to finally saying my father was killed in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget the time when I went to a veterans in Louisville to paperwork for my mother for benefits and so forth. I had to go try and take care of that business for her. And I was sitting there, and a guy looked over at me, and he said, well, now this is your classification. You are a war orphan. That's what we classify you. And I said, sir, I'm not an orphan. I'm not a war orphan. I am the son of a soldier who made the ultimate sacrifice.
Good for you.
And I belong to one of the largest families in the world.
That's right.
And that's veterans' families.
That's right. Yeah, and you'll always be. You knew your dad for about 15 years.
15 years.
What one word would you use to describe him?
He was, I put it this way, my mother would actually get a switch at times if I was bad and spank my hind end. But my father, all he had to do was just talk to me, point a finger at me, and I would straighten up in a heartbeat and follow every what he said, and scared to, you know, to death that this man would get a hold of me, be nothing left. So, you know, when I knew my mother would say, I'm going to tell your daddy.
You better straighten up.
Better straighten up. But he was the type guy, too. When I was out and started running with friends and stuff in the neighborhood when we lived on post, and when I go to swimming pool, the movies, or where I went with my friends and stuff, he was always, I could look on my shoulder, and he would be somewhere checking on me to make sure that I was okay. And when I played baseball and stuff on post, he was my best supporter I ever had. He'd be right there in that stance and so proud to see me out there. And I actually played real good. I was good at what I did.
You did. In fact, I should have mentioned when you were in high school, you were one of the premier athletes at the, it was Jessamine County High, I guess, at that time. Yeah. What would you think now? What would you think if he could come back today for an hour and look at Barry and Brenda and the girls and the grandchildren and the town and how you did, what would he say?
Oh, I think he'd be really, really impressed, and I think he'd be so proud that it'd be, you know, and I would have given anything if my grandkids could have met
him. Sure. Well, your grandkids and your great-grandkids, when they come, can always know that their daddy gave the ultimate, their granddaddy gave the ultimate sacrifice.
You know, you talk about sports, Doug. There was times during that when I was playing sports, I used to sit out on the field because my mother most time couldn't make it to the games because she was always in the hospital or sick. And I would just look up there and just kind of vision and say, man, wouldn't it be great to see him sit there? Just to see him watching me play again.
And according to what you believe, you couldn't see him, but he could see you. He's guided you all these years. You know that. Barry, it has to be something that is hard. It's hard to lose a family member of any way. But to lose a dad like you did, it has to be bittersweet. It's terrible to lose a dad, but how sweet it is to know that he was, he did it with dignity. He gave his life with valor. He did it doing something for our country that a lot of other people did too, in a lot of different wars. You know, if you look back over history, and you and I attend these veteran ceremonies quite often, and that's one thing that when we recognize veterans, it's not just today. You know, you got to go back 200 years, all of these people who laid their lives down for us.
Exactly.
And the fact that the things we can do because of that, the fact that we can go into the election booth and vote for whoever we want, we don't have to worry about getting shot, and we can go to any church we want, and all that kind of stuff because of the things that these guys did, your dad included. So it's kind of got to be bittersweet.
It is. Yeah. I mean, somewhat it's an honor. Now I can face it. I can somewhat talk about it.
Yeah.
I deal with it better. Because, like I say, I lived a good portion of my life still waiting for him to come home.
Right.
All right. I just never really accepted that he was dead. But now I can tell people that my father was killed in Vietnam. I can talk about the battle he was in, how he was killed. And, you know, and to me, he and all the veterans deserve so much respect.
Sure. Sure, they do.
And that's what we should be doing. And plus, I can relate to how the families make a sacrifice to.
Right. And hopefully that's what this program is going to do for people. And that's why I appreciate you agreeing to talk to us, and that unfortunately there will be people in our community who may have to go through this sometime. May not be this year, next year, maybe 20 years, but sometime, somebody. And hopefully the work in them will give them some strength and some hope. Barry, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
My thanks to Barry for coming in this morning and talking about his dad and his death and what it meant to him. A hard time for sure for that family, but we so appreciate the sacrifice that was made on our behalf by Kyle and all of the other Americans who have given their life in the line of duty throughout our history. We appreciate you joining us here on All Things Jessamine. We'll do it again next Saturday morning. Hope that you can join us. It's all brought to you by the Farmers Bank of Jessamine County, and it's all right here on Jess FM 105.9.
In 1934, a brand new house cost about $6,000. The cost of a gallon of gas was 10 cents. And in 1934, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County opened their doors at 200 North Main Street in Nicholasville, and they've been there ever since. The times may have changed, but Farmers Bank is still here. Still proud to be the only locally owned and locally operated bank in Jessamine County. Banking with friends and neighbors. Farmers Bank, equal housing lender, member FDIC.